Good morning, everybody. This is IT Live, brought to you by Academy Sports and Outdoors. Normally, Ian's on Wednesday, but he's on vacation. He's riding horses, having fun. So he left us in the wind. But instead, I got two heavy hitters that showed up. Our very own Evan Veith in Nash Talks, Texas. Normally, I'm doing the baseball show with him behind the scenes and producing, but we're going to hang out today. We're going to talk through the depth chart. I pulled depth charts from our lads. They are incorrect. And we're going to use that incorrect depth chart to talk about what we think the real depth chart is going to be and make sure that we have the correct information. If you're just going off our lads, you're not going to have a great feel for this depth chart. All right, guys, before we start, IT is offering a deal right now, $1 until the Ohio State game for new members, only $1. It's best board in the game, recruiting. And I know you guys are probably not having a great time recruiting. Just hold on. It'll get solved. And then, of course, the best analysis, Ian, Paul, myself. If you like baseball, you got Nash and Evan. If you like basketball, you got Keenan and Evan. We got all your bases covered at Inside Texas. $1 until 8:30. And also, our very own Paul Wadlington just dropped his 13th annual 2025 Longhorn Football Prospectus Thinking Texas Football. It is the best Texas preview in the world. Confidently can say that. As well as an SEC preview of all the other teams, you can get a really good feel for our opponents coming up, and also the people we don't even play. And then our very own Eric Nalin also has a recruiting section. You want to buy this preview. If you go to the links in the description, you can get the ebook version or the print version. You will not regret it. All right, chat. Shout out, Texas boy, RB1 Clark. All right, he's calling it. He's calling a shot right now. You know I'm a Christian Clark guy, so I'm okay with it. Let's pull up offense first. And then we're going to talk through this. Couple important things. So I want to stress this. This is not an Inside Texas depth chart here. This is from our lads. It is incorrect. I'm going to say that again up front. It is incorrect. We're going to talk about why it's incorrect. Also, a major feature that they're missing is post-spring additions, right? So you're not seeing Jack Injuries on here. You're not seeing Emmett Mosley on here. So that's going to be an important aspect too. But it is going to be a jumping off point to just kind of talk about the offense. And of course, later on the show, we will talk the defense. What position group you guys want to start with?
I think you got to go wide receiver. You know, I don't think the Longhorn Football Prospectus has the wide receiver depth chart looking like this, but that's probably the one that there's at least the most question marks about how the players are going to be utilized and where specifically Moore and Mosley are going to play. Because when Eric first talked about how this duo was going to work, because felt pretty good about Wingo being kind of this X outside guy, go be dominant out there. But was Moore going to transition outside? Maybe that makes him more appealing to the NFL. Was Mosley going to stay in that inside role that he played about 70% of the time at Stanford? Seems like now they're working out Mosley on the outside, which makes it a little easier to work him and Livingston in and out, which I like. But I think what's important is that they can both play inside and out for this Texas team, which will help a lot in the short yardage. And obviously, DeAndre Moore's got the speed to be able to kill the team was over top. You saw in the Georgia game when he was taking balls from intermediate for near touchdowns. So, I mean, I'd love to know your take on this, Nash, but I do think that's the point where we have the most to learn as we get through the summer.
Yeah, I mean, right now I'm putting the numbers in, and just off of Isaiah Bond and Matthew Golden alone, that's 34.2% of our receiving yards, and that's an even larger percent of our targets. So when you lose a significant amount of your production like that, it's just a wide open competition to who's going to fill it. And what you've seen from Steve Sarkisian in the past is he really does not care about what class you're in, how old you are. If you're a baller and you show up and mainly do you show up in the right spots? Can he trust you? Because that's paramount number one for Steve Sarkisian. So I know it sounds cliche, but whoever Steve Sarkisian ends up trusting the most, they're going to get on the field and they're going to be on the field a lot.
Yeah. So I was watching the Florida game last night. I'm going back through everything. Two things stuck out to me just watching through the season so far. One, it was startling how much Quinn and Isaiah Bond were not on the same page. And I'm hard on Quinn.
Oklahoma game, for example.
I thought Quinn was right. Because Isaiah Bond wouldn't even be near the ball, you know, and Quinn's not missing that bad. And then Quinn's doing some type of signal every time where he's basically saying, like, you got the route wrong or whatever it is. So that was disturbing. I mean, Isaiah Bond, if you threw him a screen and he ran, but like anything downfield, I mean, they would miss each other by like 5 to 10 yards. He wouldn't even be anywhere near where he needs to be at his comeback. that stuck out to me with Bond and Ewers, and I don't think that was a Ewers thing. And then I watched the Florida game, which is probably Moore's worst game. He was dropping a ton of stuff. It's so weird. You'll watch him in Mississippi State, Georgia, too, on fire. And then I'll have games where he's just dropping stuff wide over the middle. So that's going to be the big question for Moore. We did talk, Evan hit on it. We thought maybe, you know, let's put Moore on the outside with his speed and then Mosley super reliable, right? So you could have a safety slot. And we're not seeing that. We're seeing Moore staying inside, Mosley outside, Mosley returning from injury. And then that allows Moore to do the smash concept, right? So the corner route, and then the outside receiver is going to hitch and stay down. And then you're also going to see him on over routes and stuff like that. So attacking the post is going to be really important with Moore on the inside. So right now, yes. Wingo to your boundary, and you can think of that as your kind of one-on-one receiver. So he's going to match up one-on-one more often with corners, which is a great thing. Moore in the slot, Mosley outside. Right now, it would be my projection for the starting wide receivers.
And one more thing on that more to the slot area is that I do think if Quinn's still a quarterback, you'd maybe prefer him to be on the outside and use his legs out there. But with Manning, those slot fades are going to be lethal. I mean, you saw Brian Thomas Jr. is going to become one of the best receivers in the NFL. And he started doing that with Jaden Daniels in college at LSU. That's a dangerous play in this Texas playbook. It's how Moore and Manning had their first touchdown. Just fooling the defense with the guy who's next to him. Mosley runs a short concept. Moore takes the safety, goes past him. That's a great way to score touchdowns with this team. I think they're going to use that a lot this year.
And they almost scored on it again before that, too.
That's true, yeah.
Went right out of bounds at the very beginning.
Yeah, so I think that's going to be a big thing. We saw Manning and Moore on Instagram stories day one in the bubble. Arch was thrown to him. So I love that. Wingo, if he can get the little details right, get those releases right, and you know he's not just playing athlete, you love him one-on-one. He's going to be faster than a corner. He has good body control in the air. It's just like Nash said, you got to be at the right place at the right times with the right releases. Everything's really timed up in Sark's offense. That's going to be the big part. But we expect Wingo to take that leap. And he came back towards the end of spring and looked like a baller. So, and then Mosley, like I said, I like his consistency. He's going to be really good underneath. And then rotating for Mosley would be Parker Livingstone, who is the outside receiver that has the long speed. So if you see Livingstone coming in for Mosley, you can probably bet that something's going to be targeted downfield. And a corner's not going to expect that when the second stringer comes in, that he's going to try to, you know, run the fade. So that's going to be an interesting part. The younger guys, of course, Kalik Lockett is not going to be the starter. They're still working. Out of the young guys right now, the closest to seeing real playing time is Dalen McCutcheon. Yep. He's right behind DeAndre Moore. He's getting rave reviews, both for his athleticism, but also his mental ability. We heard about him a ton. So ironically, the non-5-star in that class is the one that we'll see significant reps, maybe in a real rotation too. I don't just mean like a 40-7 game.
Yeah, did they just flip a coin for how they ordered these freshmen? Like, how is Lockett so far ahead of even French, who seems the guy who's kind of
1A, 1B with him? Rankings. I would assume he's probably top highest overall.
Yeah. What's alarming, Coach Top? And then Justin Whale, WTF is Our Lads. So Our Lads is basically like the depth chart website for college sports. If you just, you know, like Google Ohio State depth chart. And it can be good if, you know, when I do my previews and stuff, it can be good just to get a feel. But like I said, this is not Bible. And you have to go do your research because, like I said, there's things incorrect here. And like I said, they haven't even updated spring editions, which is weird.
I just went full recruiting rankings. I just looked at the recruiting rankings and said, okay.
Well, also top two, with Dalen being closer, he's the only one that's like second string right now, right? So he's the only one behind Moore. So he's naturally going to rotate in more because he's closer to the depth chart, because you got like Wingo, or you got Mosley, Livingstone, then a third string. And then Livingstone could even probably come in for Wingo. So the 5-stars are more in that kind of third spot. So it's also that benefit to McCutcheon is that he's just not as far on the depth chart just due to how the roster kind of shook out there.
And if Wingo goes down, I don't think McCutcheon's the replacement. More like it's more Lockett they're going to ask to step up.
Yeah.
Hey, and if Dalen McCutcheon is anything like he is on my EA Dynasty, hey, there's a stud.
It said Phil Steele had Lockett starting too, or maybe they used Phil Steele. I think it's the opposite. I think Phil Steele used our lads, unfortunately. And so you just can't, like I said, it's not Bible.
Go buy a Paul Wadlington perspective. That's the answer.
Yeah, for sure. All right. So that's wide receiver, Wingo, boundary X, single side receiver, big playmaker, put him on the island. Now it's a problem. Moore in the slot, fast receiver. Coaches keep saying we're going to be impressed by his 40 time. They expect him to go this year to the NFL. They think he's going to be a riser like we've seen with our wide receivers. You want to think speed, deep overs, or you want to think slot fades, that kind of stuff. He's going to be matched up with nickels and safeties, so that's going to be a mismatch. And then on the outside, Emmett Mosley, you want to think about reliability, being in the right spot, converting third downs, making contested catches. Likely those guys turn out to be fan favorites. Because when all else fails, those are the guys that are going to pick up the sticks.
On Emmett Mosley too, I just really love how he's got some really, really strong hands. Like you said, just the consistency. Like, this is a guy that you saw him use in motion a ton. Steve Sarkisian loves to use motion. Like, Emmett Mosley is just one of these guys that I think Steve Sarkisian is going to love.
Yeah. Yep. This is an interesting thing to talk about. So Niblett is back at wide receiver. He's one of the fastest guys on the team. He might surprise player this season. So Niblett's in this weird spot where he's like running back, wide receiver-ish. So like, think of Keelan Robinson, but not as gadgety. So for instance, Eric reported on Monday that he ran a corner route, like a true corner route into the end zone, went up and got it. So that's not very running back. So what we could do is 21 personnel, so like two back stuff, which works in modern football because of these two high safeties now. People are going back to more traditional old school run styles, two back, 12 personnel, that kind of stuff. So when you see Niblett in, hey, you know, be ready for the rail, be ready apparently for a corner into the end zone. So like real wide receiver skill set, but he also is, I think, the fastest guy on the team. So even at running back, you can replace some of the speed of Jaden Blue. You can replace some of the receiving there. And then, hey, motion him out to the slot. Match the fastest guy up on the field with nickels and safeties again. So Niblett, I think John nailed it here. Niblett's going to be a really interesting piece of this offense. And he's also, when you see him in, you need to be paranoid because they're not just bringing him in to lead block, right?
Yeah, I mean, it sounds like he can really throw some issues into how a team matches up with personnel. Because like you mentioned, I mean, you can go straight from 21 personnel. You can throw them out wide. And, especially even, honestly, even like a C.J. Baxter. Like having just him back there, if you have to have him just block, like Baxter's one of the best blocking backs I've seen.
And he's
so
big.
Just having him and Niblett, you have a ton of ways that you can go about that.
For sure, 100%. And, yeah, that's why Baxter's going to be important because why the coaches love him because he's huge, right? He can do all the traditional. Absolutely. He can power run. He's good enough in the open field. And then you need to be able to block, man. Rewatching these games, man, they're running these stunts where the defenses are going to pull their edge out. They're going to pull the tackle out, right? We're going to have a DT in the B gap. He's going to stem over to the A gap. That's just going to open the door to the B gap. And then they'll fire in that nickel. And our backs, for some reason, because they're reading inside out, they weren't quick. And these nickels were able just to fire in and just smack Quinn. So a fast processing back that's big enough to block, not just get in the way, but actually block, is going to be important. So,
well, because Baxter's like a legitimate blocker.
Yeah. And he's big, man. When he came in, he looked like a boundary receiver, like how he was built, but now he's like totally packed it on through rehab. So that'll be interesting. So we can talk tight end. Now, of course, injuries has not been updated. Spring has not been updated. Once again, it's July. And they haven't updated. So number one at tight end is Jack Injury. There's no question there. 90% plus catch rate. I think Paul said he was Cal's number one receiving option. Talk about a stick mover. And also with a 90% catch rate, and I think he's like 75% win rate on contested catches, according to Paul. Read the preview. Hey, man, that's Arch's best friend, right? And Arch likes to throw over the middle. And that's going to be a big point. So when I hear Mosley and injuries, I think safety and third downs. When I hear Wingo and Moore, I think touchdown. So that's going to be an important part. Jordan Washington, exciting young player, crazy athleticism, crazy size, all the stuff to be an NFL tight end. He just has to learn the back half of his role, which is going to be blocking. They're working hard on that with him, with Jeff Banks, because it's not his natural skill set. But Washington's young, and if he learns that, he's going to be good. Spencer Shannon, 6'7" or whatever, learning more how to be an inline tight end, block-centric. It should be kind of time for him to pop. They have Will Randall ahead of Winston. That's not correct. Randall's going to be their last tight end. And then Winston was interesting because after Washington got hurt, and of course we didn't have injuries in spring, man, he was showing out. He was showing up in the right spots in zone. He was sitting down. He's not this 6'7" receiving tight end build. He has more H-backy ability, which is what I prefer, frankly. So him being in the right spot, I would expect Winston to be really valuable in 12 personnel. I don't know if that's going to be the case this season, but of course, going forward, it's going to be big. And then we brought in Nick Townsend, who came after spring as well. Freaky athlete, man. Go watch his high school tape, NFL tight end. I don't know how great this room is going to be this year. I think they're going to be really good. But next year, I think this room is going to be super dangerous. So I was kind of worried about tight end going into it. Now I feel really good about this room.
I mean, yeah, I'm really confident with injuries. He is like Washington said, you know, hey, the 75% catch radius or contested catch, and that's legit. But to me, I'm also looking at he's got 33 first downs, 2 touchdowns. So when he's getting first downs or touchdowns, that's accounting for over 57% of his targets. Like this is for people that remember, like Jordan Whittington was like he was our first down, like legitimate option. Like if we need a first down, we're going him. Think back to when Quinn Ewers had Texas back was literally on the wall. We either make this pass or we don't. It's Jordan Whittington. Yeah. I think that this is going to be Arch Manning's Jordan Whittington, like this Jack Andrews. He's going to be a legit option for Arch to just, hey, you know what? We just need a first down or we just need to get this here.
Yeah, and you can talk as micro or macro as you want about how Texas built this receiving core. You can – from the first kind of idea of that is – Wingo and Moore were brought in as good athletes that are hard to find in the transfer portal, and you bring them onto your team and you make them long-term priorities. And that's what happened there. The two starters entering the offseason, you knew they were going to be there. But of course, there was a lot of question mark after that. Was Parker Livingston able to be a starter? Is Jordan Washington able to be a starter? I mean, Washington hasn't caught in a pass yet in college football. So that's where I think most of us were all a little concerned about where that was. And I wrote in a recent article that that's exactly why you bring in Mosley and Endries and exactly why those are the two targets. You didn't need Mosley to be this elite receiver as an athlete. You needed him to be a good blocker, a solid pass catcher, good hands, first downs, things like that. And then Endries, I mean, you're getting the guy who's probably tight end 2 on most big boards right now heading into the 2026 NFL draft. That's pretty far away, but how often do you see a top 3 player in a position transfer to your school? That's pretty special, and Endries is going to be a huge safety blanket for what Manning wants to do. He is so, so good on slip routes where he starts on a block and finds just a little bit of space going out left or right, depending on where Manning is. And he turns those into like 20, 30 yard gains. That's one of his best assets is getting into the open field. The 2 touchdowns definitely concerns me a little bit. I'm going to mostly chalk that up to it being Cal not scoring many touchdowns, not having a great offense to get them down the field. And that's what, you know, Justin was talking about. There needs to be a red zone guy. My bet right now would actually be being Mosley instead of Endries, but if it's Endries, Washington, and Shannon, that's fine with me as far as both blocking and receiving talent. Shannon and Washington can kind of split how that works. So I'm very confident in where this room is. And I do think Endries is probably going to be a second-round pick, maybe where JT Sanders was taken. But Texas has had 2 straight years with top 3 tight end receiving yards leaders, and I don't think that's going to change.
So much of it is scheme, man. Like, so Endries not necessarily like a burner, right? He's more just a consistent guy. But you see how many times Helm is just wide ass open. And that's the scheme. Like you said, leaking out on split zones. We're going to run a lot of GT counter or GH counter. So guard pulls, tight end behind, pulling up to linebacker. Well, the good part is you can fake that. And he can run through that B gap. Now you got a B gap release, which kills teams right now. The NFL is killing people with running back B gap release rails. You could do something like that now, releasing through the B gap, because teams are just not picking it up. So that's
I remember when I was going over the Jahlil Billingsley, when I was putting together his every play, I was like, dude, this is like one of the hardest players I've ever seen, like to get a feel for if he's good or not. because he was just catching wide open. Like, Mac Jones, every single time he threw the football to him, it was legitimately like there wasn't a guy within 10 or 20 yards of him.
Yeah.
So if Jack Hendricks can be that guy, I mean, like, this is a guy that minimum 25 targets. He's number 12 in the nation last year as a sophomore and yards per route run at 2.13, which is really, really good for a tight end. Like, he had a very solid year as freshman year, too. Like, this is – like you mentioned, this is a guy that's, like, on the top of the tight end prospect boards. This is a massive pickup for us.
Yeah, it's him and Claire that went to Ohio State. Those were, like, the prized tight ends. Justin Wells picked up on a great question. We kind of hit a little bit. But do you think red zone touchdown when you think of any of these guys? So, here's what I think about the red zone holistically. Couple things. The run game's going to be a lot better. Arch can run in the red zone. You saw it versus A&M, that kind of stuff. So he's a powerful runner. So all the zone read is there. Also the backside of GH counter that I was talking about, you can add a read element. And so you can also pull on that. So I think just in general, we have better running options in the red zone, especially if Baxter is back, that kind of thing. We got to see what Clark can do. That's going to be important. We'll talk running backs, but I think Livingstone, even though he's a deep threat in the red zone, I think he can go up and get it. Tall, good hands. Wingo, we know, has the athleticism. You know, he can go up and get it. That's an option there. And then injuries, if he can settle in the zone, in the red zone, it's a little condensed. But if he can settle and he has good hands, which he does, Arch is not scared to throw over the middle. Quinn generally didn't like that part of the field anytime it was condensed. Maybe an RPO. But Quinn really didn't like to scan like that. If you watch Arch's high school tape, Arch has no problem throwing a bullet in between two defenders and putting it on the money. So he doesn't shy away from that. That's also going to help injuries in the red zone.
And so, to Evan's point too, or to combine both of those points, Steve Sarkisian loves using that kind of tight end slip screen where tight end, he starts out like he's blocking. And that's actually the play that Quinn Ewers got injured on versus Alabama in his freshman year. Steve Sarkisian loves using tight ends in, you know, really myriad of ways. But Texas being a better run team, that's going to lend itself a favor, like lend itself a hand to, hey, now when injuries is looking like he's blocking, we really, really have to respect that, you know. And, like, we got to – now teams are going to be like, okay, I got a full-on sellout for the run. Let me forget about injuries, you know. I don't need to just be sitting there looking at this tight end that's going to be blocking me here. I need to get out in front of Arch. And then all of a sudden, where's injuries? Oh, crap. He's in the end zone.
Well, our tight end coach too from Oklahoma State, their position is called the cowboy back, and they do a lot of fun stuff in the red zone with their tight ends. So Sark's, it's a scheme match as far as Sark loves to motion around the tight end, so you can't sneak him out. Oklahoma State coach is used to that system, and then we've got injuries who can do that. So everything is just like check on as far as all of that making sense. So I think the red zone will be better in that regard. If it's not, then it's something systemic, right? It's not a player issue. It's a play selection issue. Yeah. We're not simulating well enough in practice. Something's up overall globally if that's the case. But as far as pieces, run game style, tight end style, big athletic receivers on the outside with good contested ability, I mean, it should all be there theoretically. Before we keep going, though, guys, let's hear a word from Academy Sports and Outdoors.
All right. Who's ready?
I'm open.
Fun can't lose, baby. Academy Sports and Outdoors. Go to your local Academy Sports and Outdoors right now, guys. Get some gear. It's always awesome. Okay. Let's talk running back. This is going to be a really important position. I think it's going to dictate a lot for us, and I think it's going to complement Arch's running ability. And there's going to be games where you don't want to run Arch. You know, I think A&M, Oklahoma, Georgia, any postseason, I think it's a green light. Maybe Florida. But overall, versus Kentucky, you don't want to use your read options. You just don't want to risk that. So in those games, it's going to have to be old school run the ball. Number one, let me see who they have starting. Trey Wisner. Great. That works. So we know he has all the intangible. We have to cover this every time. He's a great leader. He's a, you know, all this. We already know that. We know he's a hard runner. I watched the Florida game, the A&M game, man. He had like a protection charm spell on him. He was just falling forward. So we know Wisner's going to be there. Not your ideal NFL measurables, ideally, but whatever.
He's got heart, man. That dude, like,
right.
Just watch the A&M game. So that's all you got to do if you want to know what Wisner's about.
Yeah, and if we don't overuse him, you know, so he's not riding the bike looking like he's going to pass out, now you can really maximize a hard runner like that. Baxter returns. He's looking big, dude. And, you know, he tore his knee up. It was all the CLs, ACL, MCL. Like, it just – his knee got tore up, which is a scary injury. You don't know what's going to happen there. But all reports from Eric is that he's, you know, going hard, and he's able to cut on it, and he's feeling confident on it. And then we talk about Wisner's mentality. Baxter's had that same thing. I mean, he was a leader as a freshman, and then he was also a leader through injury, which is hard to do, right, to stay up for your team and stay focused. So that's a big part. And then, of course, he has the NFL measurables. Jarrett Gibson didn't have all the little pieces, couldn't pass block, which you have to be able to do in this system for our max protects play actions. But he was the best at falling forward on this team after contact. So he'd get a hit, and he would still fall. Don't say PCL on air. It gives me PCL. Final leaks. Yeah, for sure. Gibson would fall forward, so hopefully we can improve that. And then Christian Clark, who I'm most excited about. He also Arizona kid, but he moves like Bijan. He's not Bijan, but he moves like Bijan, right? So, and what I mean by that is lateral, really good lateral ability. I equate it to like an alpine skier. When you see those guys moving between trees, that it's that kind of forward momentum, but also able to go side to side. He can sit down in the chair and stuff like that while maintaining speed.
Like a slalom.
Sure, exactly. And so Christian Clark has that. Of course, he had the Achilles injury. We think it was a partial tear because he came back so fast, but they're impressed by him too, man. So I wanted a portal addition, to be frank, for the running back room, because this was before we knew Baxter and Clark's injuries. But now that we have this, these guys coming back, there's situations where all these backs can be used. I feel better about this room. We just need to make sure pass protection's there, and the offensive line has to be able to block in short yardage and red zone for them.
I feel so bad for how Quatrevion Wisner gets talked about in his profile, because it's never about how he actually is running the ball. It's about his
all heart. Intangibles. Yeah.
His intangibles. And like I see it, he is probably the worst on the depth chart at winning. Just say a swing pass one on one. You got to beat your guy, make a move, shed off a tackle. Not quite his game. But I do think when you're talking about Ohio State that week one game, he's going to be the player you need to rely on the most, because you just can't put too much stock into Baxter being healthy, even 90% healthy. And I know, like, there's no one Steve Sarkisian likes more than CJ Baxter. The fact that Eric was saying that Baxter is like already competing with Wisner is insane to me.
He started over Brooks that year, dude, and we were all like, "What is going on?" You know, well, and
Jonathan Brooks was the first running back taken off the board.
And for the Brooks thing is like Jonathan. We just saw Jonathan Brooks. You know, they slow play Jonathan Brooks, and what happens with him?
Yeah,
that knee goes straight to shreds again. So this is one of those deals where, like, I would love it if CJ Baxter's out there ready to go, but I have a hard time. I'm cautiously optimistic with it, with the reports that
I
from CJ.
I think you're going to see week one Wisner taking kind of that A&M role where he really is the number one guy. And obviously all three of these other players are going to have an impact in some way or the other, especially I think Clark, if you can get him on a few of these plays, we can get him out in the open. Like, give him five snaps, give him the ball on two or three of them, and then don't push it too far after that. And then you have weeks two through four to say, hey, we're playing against San Jose States and the Sam Houstons of the world. Baxter and Clark, let's get you running against some lesser opponents. Gibson, can you carry the ball without fumbling? Can you block in pass pro? That's the big one for me. I think Jarrett Gibson is the huge X factor in this room. If he is what we think he can be as a player outside of specifically running the ball, running a guy over, if he can do the little other things, he is going to be so good. And this Texas running back room could be, I think it already is the deepest in the SEC. Georgia's the only one that really has an argument because they use the portal pretty well, get Roderick McCray. But I still think Texas is the only one where you can look four deep and go, they actually want to use all four of these guys. And that doesn't even account for James Simon or whatever you want to call Niblett's position, athlete, running back, whatever it is.
I still, too, and when we're talking about like Arch Manning running the football, I'm still taking a I believe it when I see it approach when it's with Sarkisian allowing because like Sark for those of y'all that don't know, like Sark hates his quarterbacks running. Like just watch him talk about running quarterbacks in press conferences.
He talks about it almost with disdain. It's
he actually like starts to look like he's disgusted inside. Like
yeah, he's like a purist. He's like to him like running the quarterback is a dirty, cheap
move. Unethical.
if y'all can't design passing concepts, you got to run your quarterback.
It's one of these deals where Arch Manning, I think we're going to see, it's going to be like the Arch Manning, Trey Wisner show versus Ohio State. And then he's going to say, you know what, Arch, you're only throwing the ball the next three games. I don't want to see your moving past that line of scrimmage until Florida.
Yeah. So it's, and Eric kind of reported that they're going to slow play Baxter. So Nash's instinct on seeing Baxter go hard versus Ohio State is likely, true that he'll have a reduced role versus Ohio State, and then we have three whatever games. Now we can start in a game. So game one is going to be, hey, frontline starters, we got to win this. And then the next three games are like, hey, second and third strings, like let's bring you along and see what you got. So that's the interesting part. He did bring him into games to run the ball last year. Yeah. But the difference is he wasn't the starting quarterback. You know, Arch goes down, it's Caldwell, you know, and this is not where we had at least Malik or Arch as a backup. If Arch goes down, man, this season becomes sadly quite different, most likely. So I do think he's going to run them in critical moments. And then also, too, man, like if the end is just crashing and they're not respecting Arch at all, you'll see it versus UTSA. I mean, he'll pull it. If Sark's going to make you defend it, if he sees that you're being lazy and not defending it, then he'll call it. But there's low risk that your quarterback's going to get hit hard because, once again, they're not defending that read. So. Yeah. But it's a balancing act here, you know. It's going to be tricky.
I would disagree with I don't think it would change the season too much. I mean, obviously it would hurt. Losing your best player on the team is going to hurt, you know.
I think it would hurt every single time. I think it's like three or four losses different.
I don't know. Well, see, I don't know because, to me, I think that this team – we'll get to the defense here, but I think that this team was always going to be a team that – whether or not they have Arch Manning, they're going to rely on a really, really strong Nat. Like, this is, in my opinion, this defense is going to be a lot better than last year. I don't know. I shouldn't say a lot better because last year's defense is really, really good. But I think that this defense, I've always thought this dating back to last year, this defense was going to be the better year. And I got a really strong feeling that this is going to be the best defense that I've ever seen in my you know, life as a Texas Longhorn fan.
Evan?
So your point was that if Arch goes down, it's still a salvageable season, Nash?
Yeah, I mean, this is a championship defense.
Yeah, we'll hit the defense.
I don't think Matthew Caldwell can go into Athens or the Swamp or anything like that and have any sort of impact. Like, I mean, you saw Gunnar Stockton do it against Texas in a half, but then what happened in the championship game with Georgia, probably didn't have the defense we have this year, but yeah, I do think the offense stems too much on, hey, we have this guy who probably is going to be a Heisman front runner. Yes, this defense is amazing, but you have to be both to win a championship. I think you could win an A&M game, but
those
really big ones hard.
Outside of Georgia and Ohio State, I'm still not sold on Florida. Outside Georgia and Ohio State, I don't think it's going to be a game where we're going to have to sit up there and we're going to have to put up like over 21 points to win a game. Like, I really – Ohio State, Oklahoma, and Georgia, those are really my games that I'm thinking like we might give up over 21 points. Outside of those, I'm very, very confident in this Texas defense.
So my thing is Florida's returning a lot of the offensive line. They have a really cool run style. They're very powerful, GT, that kind of stuff. We think Lagrae is the real deal. Jaden Baugh, the running back, is the real deal. Florida is going to be a potent offense. I also, unfortunately, said yesterday, I think A&M is going to be a good offense. So returning, I think, four or five starters there. Two or three of them are mentioned in the top of the SEC at offensive line. They bring in Concepcion from NC State. That's a good receiver. They have Terry Bussey, the five-star athlete that we wanted. They bring in Mario Craver from Mississippi State, who's a super deep threat, fast as hell. They bring back Moss at running back, And then Marcel Reed is a dynamic athlete. He's got to get his processing way better to truly maximize. But I think A&M is going to have a great offense. I think Florida will. I think Oklahoma can play mature ball and be frustrating. Ohio State, the Saiyan question, but Saiyan looked great in his spring game. They have the best receiving core coming back. And then Georgia is the interesting one where I'm not sure that they're going to have the craziest offense compared to who I just mentioned, but they're so damn well coached. They just find your weakness. Yeah. So it's like, that's my thing is like, I think we're going to have a really good defense. I don't know how much you're going to be able to improve statistically. I think we were number two overall as far as defensive production last year. I don't think you're going to be able to match the coverage success of a Barron and a Makuba. And just their intelligence and the interceptions, I think potentially our playmaking could go down in that regard. What I do like is the edges and linebackers. I think that's really scary on passing downs. Our pass rush might end up being our coverage. There might not be enough time.
That's also like our pass rush is going to be just absolutely disgusting. And I think that's going to end up forcing the balls out a lot quicker.
Yes.
It's going to lead to more interceptions. I agree with 100% Makuba and Barron. Those are some really, really – like, those are, like, NFL dudes day one this year. I have a hard time seeing, for example, a DJ Lagway. I got to believe it. I'll believe it when I see it.
You saw it a little bit. You saw – I mean, best
– he is talented. I'm not going to sit here and say that he's not talented. But I've watched him in every game that he, you know, against a solid, top SEC opponent or a good team. He's plus or 10 minus around 50% completion percentage. And then also it's a 1-to-1 touchdown to interception. Like, to me,
he's all or nothing. He's the best deep passer in the country, verifiably. So he's great deep, incredible there. Lagway has to work on full field quarterbacking. So when it goes into intermediate and short, he hasn't been great there. That's the next step for Lagway. But
I'll believe it when I see it when it comes to Lagway in Florida. I don't know. I have a really, really hard time not having trust in this Texas defense to go out there and just dominate.
We've been a defensive team. You know, the irony is everybody talks Sark on all the broadcasts and don't give our defense the credit. This has been a defensive team. My only issue is we're changing out a couple of really important pieces in Makuba and Barron. And also it's a new coaching staff on that side of the ball. We're going to run a little bit of a different focus schematically. So there will be a little bit of a different learning curve. I think as far as the caliber of athlete, we have bigger guys that run the same speed generally. So the athleticism's freakier with a Jelani McDonald's or a Derek Williams. But as far as Makuba, just rewatching those games, it's like he just understood these concepts, man. He was all over it. So I think we could have better – more impressive. This guy runs as fast at a bigger weight. I just don't know if they'll have the maturity and understanding of an older Makuba and an older Barron. But we'll talk deep. We got too deep into the defense. We still have to finish the offense. But before we keep going, guys, let's hear a word from David McClellan.
I'm just going to say, guys, you probably need a fiduciary financial advisor. And I've got the guy for you. His name is David McClellan with Forum Financial. He works broadly and deeply with his clients as a financial life coach. And he should know something about coaching because he won several national championships as a swimmer for the University of Texas. He specializes in financial planning and has contributed numerous articles to Kipling on the topic of retirement tax bombs. So contact David today to be your fiduciary financial planner and schedule a one-hour consultation to assess your financial situations. The free consultation is available, so just give him a call. The number is 312-933-8823. That's 312-933-8823. His email is also in the description below.
All right, let's talk offensive line. So we lose 4 out of 5 starters. That's, you know, means more question marks. But it doesn't mean
not ideal.
Yeah, so we have Goosby, who we think is going to be an early round pick, a one and done for us. He came in for Banks, and he came, you know, he wasn't playing the weaker part of the schedule. He's playing the better team, so we saw a lot there. Feel comfortable at left tackle as far as frontline starters. I don't feel comfortable with depth. We'll talk about that. Nato at left guard. So Nato had some issues apparently with schemes, I would guess, because the athleticism is there, right? So why wasn't he a shoo-in already? So The athleticism's there. If we're talking these GT and these GH counters, meaning pulling guards, I love it because he's fast and big. And then you have on the opposite side, DJ Campbell, who returns, which I think was great. I'm glad he wasn't trying to, you know, keep up with the Joneses or keep up with the Bankses. Cam Williams kind of got caught hand in the cookie jar, thinking he was at the Banks level, and that wasn't the case in the draft. I'm glad Campbell came back to try to improve his stock there. Cole Hudson at center, older player. I'm good with that. It's going to be hard to match the intellectual prowess of Jake Majors. I always felt good about that, but hopefully there's less snap infractions. He's also a bigger player, so when we're running zone stuff and having to handle noses and climb up to linebackers, hopefully our interior is stronger in the run game. That's going to be a huge factor in the red zone. And then at right tackle right now, we have Brandon Baker slotted in, former five-star, but probably him or Nato are the most questionable about performance going into this year. And then unfortunately behind Baker and Goosby, there's not a lot of clear stuff here. So we have, they don't even have the freshmen on here, do they?
Yeah, they don't have any of them.
Yeah, so yeah, I don't know where he's at. But that's probably our third guard. And you don't want that as a true freshman, our third tackle, sorry. As a true freshman. So our guard depth is scary right now. If everyone stays healthy, probably good. If Goosby goes down, we're not in a great position here. That's why we want to recruit the position strongly. And then more than likely we have to go out and grab one or two high caliber tackles for next year if Arch returns, because we can't leave Arch with a empty and or inexperienced tackle room. So it's question marks, but the question we want answered is, Flood has always been great in pass protection. You know, a good half of the sacks came from Quinn, not the protection. So we've always had that, but we haven't been good red zone runners. We haven't been good third down runners. When we got to have it, we haven't been able to get it. So that's the big question I think Flood needs to answer this year for me is, I'm great with the pass protection. We need to be able to enforce our will straight up. Sark doesn't need to scheme something cute or something like that. We're running at you. Hopefully this interior with their athleticism and size can answer that question. So what do you guys think overall about kind of offensive line?
I mean, I agree 100%. This team, it sounds crazy to think, right? We have not been a good run blocking team. I don't think ever really since Steve Sarkisian's been here. Yeah. I think because I always go by the adage of a good running back is going to make a bad offensive line look good, or a great running back is going to make a bad offensive line look good. An exceptional running back is going to make a decent offensive line look great. And that's what we had in Bijan for 2 years. And then we got another year with Jonathan Brooks. And I'm not saying that these guys aren't exceptional like a Trey Wisner, but I think that you drop down a tier level. Mm-hmm. And what that creates is it makes the offensive line look like it's going backwards, when I think the offensive line's been sitting there same exact spot, spinning their wheels almost. We have never been a team that's just going to go out there and just plow dudes over. Honestly, the only time that I can think that Steve Sarkisian's actually gone out there and ran clock the way that he wants to is when we went out to Alabama. That's the only time I've seen it. And one thing that gives me a lot of hope that I think that we're going to get this, I know that you said, yeah, like how many the Greg Jenkins game was to listen to the broadcast mention how many times Jake Majors is a football cyborg, right? But – you go out there, I think that this year, Cole Hudson, man, that dude's just nasty. Like, that dude wants to get down and dirty. He wants to – like, he's the type of guy that he's going to be throwing punches on the inside of the
– he's from a run-blocking offense in high school, too. All they did was run.
No gloves, just tape on the fingers, mullet out the back. I love this dude. Like, he's what you want in the offensive line. I think that we're going to see a kind of a – in this all respect to – Jake Majors, but I think that we're going to see a little bit of a step up in Cole Hudson with the aggression that he has.
The size and physicality match is going to be better.
I'm not going to go out and say anything like this is a better line than last year, but I think last year's line got very overrated by the end. I have a lot of opinions on how people talked about it. I think the Ewers thing kind of gave them a scapegoat to talk about or not talk about the inabilities that some of these players had, because like, do we really think Brandon Baker is going to have the same amount of infractions as Cam Williams? And even if he does, is he going to be that much worse than Cam? Like, was Cam Williams really a guy that you guys were like super excited about having on the right tackle right there? No, he should have stayed another year and come back to college football. Bad choice from his agent or himself. I'm not sure exactly how that came around, but like, as much as Baker's a question mark, would Williams not be a question mark as well? And then Hayden Connor and Jake Majors were not good run blockers for this team last year. Like, no. Running, you could see it every time it was run, running back to the right of the quarterback, run into that A B gap area. They were not getting pushed. So while I do have my questions about, you know, Hudson maybe being the leader of the offense at the center position with the young quarterback, or Neto being able to pass block well, those guys are way better athletes than the two that they are replacing. So the push just by itself, how strong these guys are against defensive lines in the SEC, just aren't as good as they used to be because of how the NIL has been working around the portal. I do think that there's going to be better run blocking this year. Now, having no Banks, is you're just going to feel that. Gooseby's going to be great. And I see some people in the chat kind of talking about why he's seen as a one-and-done guy. The main reason right now is that you have the super top-heavy tackle class with, like, Mauwaga out of Miami, Proctor, who's going to be great out of Alabama, Fanoa at Utah. And then it's just a bunch of guys and a lot of, like, transfers who you're hoping are good, like World, who went to Oregon and Ohio State, Onyanwa. But if Gooseby's the athlete that we think he is, which we're pretty sure he is, yeah, and then can play that well, which he showed he could play that well against the best teams, you have reason to see why first full year starting after having a little bit of tape the year before, if he really is good, why not be a second round pick or a late first rounder? He's got the intangibles to do that, I think. So I'm not super stoked about this O-line because there is no depth. Like, Connor Robertson's probably the only piece where I'm like, hey, I'd be all right with him coming in, move Hudson down to guard, Robertson plays center if someone gets hurt.
Yeah.
But yeah, Nick Brooks coming in or Kojo, that does not spark a lot of confidence. I really wanted them to bring in a swing tackle guard from the portal this year. I'm not really sure why they didn't. And next year, I put in one of our posts, but there's not a lot of immediate transfer needs that you can see right now. Now, a lot can change in a year's time, but if left tackle is the only real need, they can go very heavily on this. And, you know, Josh Simmons was a transfer tackle, and he just became a first-round pick this past year for Ohio State. So it's not unheard of to go after tackle. Now, it might not be optimal, but Texas will have the ability to pay one next year. I think that's what's going to happen.
I think that when you look at the Cam Williams situation, that's just really an unfortunate deal where I think that, like, he bought way too much into the preseason stock. Like, you know, the preseason draft projections. Like, he was a late first-round draft pick in the mocks consistently. And I think that they just put way too much stock into that. And, like, he was just like, you know what? He wasn't willing to let go of that was gone, right? Trying to hold on to it. Over 50% of our – or not over, 42% of our penalties on the offensive line came from Cam Williams, from the starters. Cam Williams is the second most penalized offensive lineman, and not just offensive line. Counts a tight end, wide receiver, running back, all that, except for quarterback. Second most penalized player in college football. Like, this is
– and it was always at awful times.
Yeah, it was drive-killing penalties. Correct. And it's just one of these deals where, yeah, like, I know Brandon Baker, right? It's kind of like a, you know, what are we going to get? But it's hard to go down from.
Yeah, it would be remarkable.
It's hard to regress. And if we get some regression there, I might be driving to go pick up my car the next day at DKR. I might be Ubering home.
Yep. All right. We got to hit defense quick because we got a hard stop at 10:30. All right. So let's go through defense. We talked some of the macro stuff here. So let's talk through this. I'm going to talk Jack. So we have Ethan Burke. Everyone feels great there. So we have Burke starting at the Jack. That's your strong side end. Generally, you know, maybe to the field. He needs to set the edge, that kind of stuff. A bigger end than our opposite Buck, which is going to be Colin Simmons. So this, we have so many pass rushers that it's not clear this guy backs up this guy. It could be entirely situational. Yeah. But kind of roughly, we'd see Buck, which is our pass rusher type, our weak side end, trying to get one-on-one with tackles, that kind of guy. It'll be Colin Simmons, Vosick behind him. This is not set in stone once again, but Vosick behind him. Then we have Zena, who's putting on a ton of good weight. He would be in the Jack category. And then I want to see who else. We're going to have Justice Terry playing in base, meaning a 3-4 down. So he would be one of those ends. That's going to be important. And then on the interior, Eric just reported on Friday that it's pretty wide open. meaning we're hearing good things about everyone, which is a positive. I would still say, as it stands today, we're going to have Merod Watson with Cole Brevard as our starting line. Second will probably be Travis Shaw with Alex January. And then Hirokanu, who we're also hearing good things about, probably that third wave.
LaVon Johnson, maybe.
I was going to say something like that, LaVon Johnson in that third wave. So we have good depth. We just have to see, but I would slot Merod Watson, the Syracuse transfer, with Cole Brevard as our starting nose and defensive tackle. So that's kind of that's going to be the defensive front. And of course, I'm super excited about the freshman Lance Jackson, but we got to kind of see where that goes.
I'm so high on him.
So we got good. We got crazy edge depth, and we have paper depth at defensive tackle. It's just who's going to rise. Are they going to be as good as our past three sets? Who knows? But you don't have to be Murphy and Sweat. You just have to do your job, be able to anchor. And then, like I said, with our pass rush being so killer, even if we're not getting interior pass rush, okay, send the linebackers up the middle. We can solve for that. So really, I just want to see that these big boys can hold down against the run. And then the pass rush we can generate from 1,000 different angles.
I think one of the most overlooked pieces on this pass rushing defense is Colton Vosick. That dude every single time I've seen him on the field, legit animal. Like he's one of these players that just jumps out on every place.
Well, how did I forget Trey Moore? So we were talking about moving Trey Moore to kind of that weak side linebacker. I disagreed with that because I thought we were solving a problem that didn't exist. But he's more rotational, right? So he can be on the edge. They've also been working sets where Simmons and Moore are on the field at the same time, which I think is the answer. Because also Moore has been good against the run game. It's not like Moore was getting blown up. Like Moore was setting the edge, doing everything right. So I like Simmons more on the same field. Of course, there's going to be situations where there's going to have to be Simmons and Burke and stuff like that. But Moore is this kind of free flow player that can move between passing downs at a linebacker spot. He can move along the lines. He could be a traditional end. The more I was watching through the games again later in the season, man, Moore was all over the place.
Moore was so close to having that season that was going to get him drafted in the first round. Like so many times that he was just like, he was just inches away from being able to like grab the jersey of the quarterback and get a sack. Yeah. Moore was a guy that did everything right that you won last year.
Yeah. And in pass rush too, when we look at a linebacker, sorry, I'm having to move faster. When we move at linebacker, we have Anthony Hill, who we know is first round pick, amazing pass rusher. Brad Spence was behind him at Mike. But what we're seeing in practice are in 7-on-7s, that kind of stuff. Not 7-on-7s, but as they're working out, Brad Spence is moving down on the line as well, playing this kind of modern NFL Michael Parsons-y edge type. So we're seeing pass rush there, meaning they're trying to find a way to get Brad Spence on the field. He's one of the better pass rushers in the SEC, came out of Arkansas. And then LaFau, who fans just don't seem to have a great appreciation for, will start at will. And that's a weak side linebacker, and a lot of the coverage schemes, a weak side linebacker is going to have to do some either handling a running back to the flats or any type of number three receiver that comes across. But sometimes he's going to have to straight up turn his back and climb the hash to help the safety, meaning that he has to actually play real pass coverage. And that's LaFau's specialty, is he's always been a good pass coverage linebacker. So
stud.
And sometimes, right, we're not going to notice LaFau in pass coverage because he's covering his guy. So
because he's doing a good job.
Yeah, the ball's not getting thrown. So it's like, well, he doesn't have any picks. It's like, yeah, he doesn't have the opportunity for the pick, right? So there's a lot more nuance to this Will linebacker position. We just think of it as Anthony Hill getting sacks and blah, blah, blah. But don't discount LaFau and what he's doing in the pass game, and more importantly, what the Will has to do in the pass game. So it'll be Hill at Mike and LaFau at Will, unless there's some interesting mixing of Brad Spence, Trey Moore, and kind of passing downs if they want to go all out pass rush at times. But LaFau at Will, regardless of what the team thinks. Anything on the kind of the quick linebacker / edge world?
If you're underrated in LaFau, shame on you. Shame on you.
And I've just done some counting. I'm not counting edge four Jonah Williams over there on Arlette's site, but 18 guys who are going to play real minutes and real snaps this year in the front seven is an absurd amount of depth. And then however you want the D-tackle combos to work, at all times in games like Georgia and Ohio State, you're going to have Colin Simmons, Anthony Hill, Trey Moore, Ethan Burke, Leona Lafound, Brad Spence on the field in some combination. Simmons and Hill on there for most of it. Like, think about how much they can rotate based on matchup and based on personnel every single snap, not just every game, every snap. It's just going to be so scary. They're going to force so many. I think there's going to be a lot of picks at the line of scrimmage this year, whether it's safeties coming up or linebackers or even defensive linemen. Batted balls and pressure sacks that turn into interceptions or fumbles are going to be a plenty with this group.
Hey, welcome sure. on to this Texas defense, love.
Yeah, that's yep. the big thing, right?
Oh, I'm there.
We need good early down run stopping from the interior to force teams into passing downs. If we can't stop them in the run, then we're not going to get in the passing downs and we're not going to be able to activate. But if we can get teams in passing situations, there's not a better front seven in the country by far when it comes to talented pass rushers in totality. Everybody, you know, a lot of people have a great edge, great pass rushing linebacker. No one has this combination of pass rushers at multiple levels of the defense that could fire from every single gap, and you just never know what's going to happen. We'll talk secondary next up. So, interestingly, they have Kobe Black starting. This might not be wrong. So we had Jalen Gilboa move from nickel last year. He's been in a battle at corner. Eric Source the other day mentioned he mentioned the corners, and so he said Manny Muhammad and Kobe Black, and then Eric was like, well, that's interesting that you didn't mention Gilbo. He's like, oh yeah, Gilbo, you know, it's gonna be a battle, but it was an interesting way to phrase it. So Kobe Black, young player, he's a big corner. There was worries that maybe he's gonna be a safety. He's dispelled that. He's lost some weight. So Kobe Black and Jalen Gilbo battling for that field corner role. And so that's going to be an interesting battle to watch. Of course, we rotate our corners, so someone might show up on the field first. It doesn't mean that you're not going to see both of these guys in a lot. A most important position schematically for coverages is your boundary corner. If you can man up your boundary corner, it unlocks the rest of your coverages, meaning you can double guys easier, all this stuff. This is why Ajaide Barron was so crucial. You could just leave him on an island and set it and forget it. He needs to guard him, and then everyone else can divert resources to the rest of the field. So we got to see if Malik Muhammad can do that. In high school, he was a man corner. He's played more zony stuff to the field in the past, but that's the big step up here. If Muhammad can be really good, you know, second, third, fourth round corner play, that's going to be really important. Most importantly, it's going to unlock the rest of our coverages. That's a big question for me, even more than who starts a field corner, is how good is Manny Muhammad playing man. Then you want to get your best five on the field. We would originally have Jelani McDonald at a safety position, but with people moving out to corner, it looks like we're going to get him at nickel here, and that's going to be fun. He's a big player. He can blitz. He can do some athletic interceptions. He would traditionally be your big nickel. So a safety body type versus a corner body type in Jalen Gilboa. Mm-hmm. So that's going to be important. But mostly,
like Brandon Jones.
Yeah. And so McDonald being at nickel is just a way to get him on the field. He's one of our best five. We're going to put him where we can. And of course, safety, Michael Taff returns. One of those things with Makuba, Barron, and Taff. They're super smart, but on top of being smart, their intelligence leads to playmaking. Taff's interception versus A&M is what sticks out to me that I was watching. So Taff's going to be the leader of the defense, no question. He's going to be in the right spot. He's going to make plays. And he's not a big guy, but he's totally willing in the run game. He'll come down and smack dudes. Taff, to me, is just going to have to be the commander of basically this entire defense. And then also Derek Williams starting opposite him. Injured last year. That was a bummer, man. But I think it was the Oklahoma game. He was one of the early games. He was balling out, man.
It was in the
– he played really well against Michigan.
He didn't get hurt. He didn't get hurt on the field, it didn't look like. It looked like one of those deals where they went in the half and then he just came out and he wasn't playing. But Derek Williams Jr., that's just – this guy, his freshman year, I don't think it's as appreciated as it should be. This is a really, really good football player. And then Michael Taff, like this is – I was going through and making like an Austin, Texas highlight for the Barron, Makuba. Michael Taff might be the hardest hitter. Makuba, I've never seen a safety, you know, flirt the line of a targeting like Makuba did. But Michael Taff, he just does not care about his body. He doesn't care if he's walking in tenders.
So that's a big thing. Sorry, we're good.
Just one last.
Go ahead.
One last thing is the only thing I'm concerned about with this defense is are the outside cornerbacks going to be able to generate interceptions and turnovers like we expect them to do from last year? That's the only thing for me.
Cool. And I agree. The playmaking ability is going to be a big question. Those takeaways super matter. AR, we kind of hit this a little bit, but we'll hit it for, I don't know, a minute, and then we'll hop off. With the 24 defense being as good as it was last year, what do you think the 25 defense will be able to improve on in the 24 team? I'll start with what I think we won't improve on. I don't think we're going to have the same level of playmaking. For instance, Paul points this stat out. Between Manny Muhammad and Jalen Gilbo, how many forced fumbles or interceptions have they had combined in their careers?
Two.
I've had one interception. And that was Manny Muhammad versus Tech. That wasn't even last year. So we don't have playmaking like we did with a Barron or a Makuba even back there. So that's a big thing that we have to see. I think we're going to be bigger and faster. So I think coming down in the run game, we're going to be much more formidable. I think our pass rush is going to be far improved. I think our front seven is going to be a real issue for teams. My only question is, what are we going to take a significant step back in pass coverage? And specifically, like Evan pointed out, playmaking, taking the ball away. Because if you don't make those plays, PK's defense can kind of let you nickel and dime up the field. And we've seen that before. So we have to be able to take the ball away. We don't have evidence pointing that this group would be elite at that yet.
I would wager that the looking at the pass breakups, right? Like I'm got it up right now. Of the top five players on the team last year, so that's three or more pass breakups. Only one is leaving. That's Jahdae Barron. So Malik Muhammad, he's tied for Jahdae Barron at nine pass breakups. Michael Taft, he had eight. Makuba, he's gone too. LaFalle and then Gilbo. So they didn't come down with the interception, they were still making plays on the ball. I don't think it's as bad as it seems.
Well, a PBU is an incompletion. It's not the same as an interception, you know? So it's like, I like that they're causing an incompletion, but it's way different to take the ball away than to smack it to the ground. It's important to kill downs, but you kill all downs for the offense if you take
it. Yeah, I mean, I really think the front seven is going to carry us. Like, you look at also that too, like the forced fumbles made, four for Anthony Hill, three for Colin Simmons, and two for Trey Moore, so.
Dude, the pass rush, like I said, the pass rush could be our coverage.
It's going to be scary. Scary.
Yeah. Yeah. And that's the point is like, look, man, if the quarterback is straight paranoid or getting the ball swatted or all of that, that's going to help the defense incredibly. But I do think the pass rush is going to be much, much improved. Linebacker play, these guys are older now, LaFalle and Hill. I feel really good about that. Only question for me is the coverage production. All right, guys, ready to roll out?
Yes, sir. Thank you for having me on, man.
Yeah,
you got the baseball group in.
Yeah, it was fun, man. I enjoyed it, guys. All right, chat, thank you guys so much for hanging out with us. Of course, you know right now we have the $1 promotion at Inside Texas ends with the Ohio State game. Join the best board in the nation. Get Paul's book. All the links are in the description. Don't miss out on it.
All right. Now's the time to sign up, man. Spring fall practice is just about to start happening. So
yeah, and Eric's team news is always killer. You'll really know what's up with the team. All right, chat. Thank you so much, Nash, Evan, and this was IT Live brought to you by Academy Sports and Outdoors. Later, y'all.